You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
We say things that don't mean anything, but thanks for listening. Yeah.
Hey everybody, welcome to We Say Things episode 174. Suns fan and Sindarin here with you. Greetings. Happy holidays, everybody. Very festive. I love your sweater, Sindarin.
Thank you.
That's all you're gonna say? That's all you're gonna say, you piece of shit? Huh?
I was told to just say thank you. So
good. Thank you. That's what you should be saying when somebody compliments you.
Yeah, I'm learning. I'm learning as we go. So,
thank you to our amazing patrons. Would you like me to take them all since you're still having issues with your throat?
Please, by all means.
Is this a sarcastic by all means?
No.
Thank you. He's faking coughing right now as I do the names. Thank you to Rupus, Q Ludes, Stupid Copilot, Persian Tongue Twister, Shish Sikh, Jigar Sikhi, Shish Hazar. Hopefully that's not a curse of some kind, actually. Like curse word, not like I'm cursing you with bad bowels for the rest of your life. D2 Bowie, Yataro Does It Again, Sindarin, A Scorpio. I also agree with Suns fan that CSGO is the best spectator esport, maybe an ad because Valve won't for their games. Oscar Magdev Seeker used all his spirit vessel charges on Santa Pudge. My grandma still doesn't know what Dota is. I love that name, actually. Don't change it. Disco Farm D loves all segments, especially the NBA one. Thank you. I'm once again asking to say my name. Simple Stooge, Silly Stooge, Salacious Stooge, Sadistic Stooge, Scathing Stooge. Sen, please change your name.
Why is that never changing?
I think he may have died. If he hasn't died, then he can prove it by changing his name. Otherwise, we're taking money from a dead man. The Mega Pope. All right, EG is out. It's your time, Shannon. Commit to buying the best NA team called Arkosh. Take them to second TI in New Zealand. Zan Xavier, Nate Thicko 01 Hamscroats, Bacon, Shark TM, Freshly Seasoned Goat Balls, Janie, Dop, Nothing to See Here, Underscore Man, Guitar Strings, Eve Remort, Ben, his Patreon names are too long and they're annoying to read out on the podcast, Broomhead, not as annoying as some people, Wooden Aftertaste, Anonymous, and about 2% of people can lick their elbows. Sorry about being vague, won't happen again, Mr. Niebling. Thank you. Don't let it happen again, Niebling. And he misspelled percent, for God's sake. But we love you. Thank you anyway.
He spelled it correctly in a lot of other languages.
Procent
is how you, is that how this you, is how you spell it in Danish.
You're kidding.
No.
Procent.
Yeah.
How do you spell prosciutto?
I think it's the original spelling from Latin. So I think a lot of the Germanic languages still have that spelling. Okay. It's how you spell it in Danish. It's how you. It's almost how you spell it in German. I think in German it's with a Z. If I'm not mistaken, yes, it is. But yeah, the very pro cool. thing is common in Europe for that.
Very nice. Thank you. Today I learned.
Yeah. Before we go into NBA, guys, which you guys are eagerly anticipating, just want to quickly apologize in advance if I sound a little bit rusty the entire episode. This is how it's going to be. I'm still sick. I've been sick since November 27th, and I'm going for the world record at this point. I'm actually committed to try to have the longest cold in history. Probably got some ways to go, but we're only just getting started here with 2.5 weeks, so I'll keep it up for you guys, I promise.
We really
we'll keep you updated
it.
Every week.
Yes, thank you. Well. And I really like that you keep apologizing when you sound almost identical to the usual Sindarin.
So this is funny to me because you say I sound almost identical to myself. I sound really nasal and really different.
I think it's like 10%
difference. One of my ears
difference.
Is blocked and it might just be like reverbing or whatever you call that. That's not the word.
That's
but
definitely
you know what I mean.
Not the word, but now that I know you have a subwoofer
it's
inside
your brain.
It's
internally amplifying my nasal sound to myself because my ear is blocked, so I sound really nasal. So if anyone else is inside my head right now, I apologize to you guys. You know what I'm talking about.
Okay, thank you.
Right, you're welcome. Yep.
All right.
Tell me some shit about basketball already.
On to the NBA segment, which everybody's really excited. I actually wasn't going to do this, but I saw a few comments asking where this segment went because it's some people's favorite segment. There's not much to talk about other than the fact that the Phoenix Suns are fucking awful right now, Sindarin.
Oh, no.
Basically, the whole team is injured. We've lost like 5 or 6 in a row, some of them embarrassingly on national TV, and it's not looking good. The good news is that, you know, last year we peaked during the regular season. We're the best regular season team by far, and then we kind of tapered off into the playoffs. We haven't hit our peak yet because we're in the dumpster right now. I'm hoping within the next two months,
the current score,
that we actually try to trade a bunch of people on our team. That would be really great. But a lot of it is health related. One player sitting out because he wants to get traded. Oh, and the one thing I forgot to mention is the Suns right now, if you go to the NBA subreddit, are the, maybe outside the Lakers, the Suns are the most unliked team. Everybody hates the Suns right now. Because we've been cocky, I guess, which I can understand. People hate Chris Paul with a passion. They don't like Devin Booker. And they just hate the Suns in general. So we're the bad guys right now.
The Suns are 16-12 and the Lakers are 11-16.
That's right, Sindarin. That's how bad the Lakers are.
That's still good news then for you.
They're gaining.
You're having a terrible season, but you're still better than the Lakers.
Well, it was we were first in the West, and then we've lost like 5 or 6 in a row now.
Oh, okay. So you're not having a terrible season. You're having a terrible stretch.
Yes, it's a real bad stretch.
Okay.
So that's the news. I'll let you guys know, of course, how the Suns are doing next. No, I'm not going to do that anymore. Only when there's something big to talk about. Speaking of next week... we're not going to get into specifics, but we're going to change things up a little bit. I may have booked, again, neither of these are confirmed, but we might have 2 episodes next week. Sindarin booked a guest episode without telling me, and I booked a guest episode without telling Sindarin. So we're just going to record them on different days, and we'll just say it's 2 episodes in the same week. Hopefully people are okay with it.
And the reason there's no communication... If this happens...
Yes.
Are we going to put those staggered? So one is on the 22nd and one is on the 29th. Or do you want to release them both same week and then do one between Christmas and New Year?
Or
do you just want to do a bonus episode?
We'll do a bonus episode. I think we release the same week because there might be stuff we talk about that is outdated within that time.
That's true.
I don't know the dates yet, and we're not even 100% confirmed that these people are interested, or they are interested, but whether they'll be able to schedule in time. So.
Just to clarify the thing about communication, though, Shannon, I told you relatively shortly after I knew mine. I'm assuming you didn't tell me for like a week.
No.
Then our communication wasn't that bad.
Well, it's more... Okay.
That we didn't...
Well, it's more I wasn't expecting anything from you. It was a real shock.
All right, so hear me out here, right? This is why this happened. So you reached out to someone to ask them to be a guest.
Yes.
Someone reached out to me suggesting someone else to be a guest.
Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
And
the person that I reached out to, I've been bugging for months, and they've never wanted to come on. And out of nowhere, they're like, okay, I want to come on now. I'm like, okay, that sounds good. So we're going to have 2 cool episodes coming up next week, hopefully. Yes, indeed. All right, first topic of this evening/day is, I guess it's semi-resolved. There was a tweet out by SG Esports on December 10th, so 5 days ago, basically saying that the organization 4D had not paid anybody for any of the stuff that they took part in, like the players and all that stuff. So there was a bit of an uproar.
That was the SADPC from last season.
I don't know if it was for the casters as well. Do you know the answer to that?
I do not know the exact specifics of this, but I do know that it took a shitload of time. Supposedly, though, it is resolved now, though, like you said.
Yeah.
At least there's some news now that everybody should have been paid. And the holdup was, so usually this is how it goes a lot of the time in esports. Somebody organizes a tournament. They get funding from sponsors, but the sponsors don't pay the full amount, if any, up front. So usually sponsors allocate a budget to sponsor a tournament, and then either parts of the pay come before. Sometimes all of it does, and sometimes it's like split, so some comes after, and sometimes all of it comes after. And this time around, a lot of the sponsorship money was still owed to the org, so they couldn't pay the participating teams until that sponsorship money came in, and now it finally did. I think on top of that, 4D is not like a... I don't think they were like a very experienced company in this field and aren't like very big, so I think it's more or less like passion-driven from what I understand. Maybe that's a slight... Maybe that's a bit of an understatement, but supposedly everything is worked out now, which is very good news. But yeah, it is sometimes just a thing in esports. Like the thing that supposedly was the problem here wasn't the fact that the payment was a little bit like took time, because a lot of the times when you sign up for a tournament and you get a prize, you kind of know that it can take something like up to 3 months to get paid out. The problem was this time that the players have been promised, all right, we will get the money within the next week, and then they just didn't. Mm. But supposedly they got it now. So it got delayed even further, and that got the players worried that they were never going to get paid at all. But
yeah,
I think it's sorted, which is the good news. Yeah, that should be it.
On the same topic, in fact, the first three topics are about this same region in South America. There was a Reddit post leaking potentially a graphic that says Arena 1 San Miguel Lima Major, and it's a picture of Enigma in like the universe or something. So obviously this hasn't been confirmed at all, but on paper, a major in South America would be amazing generally, not only because we haven't had a major there, but because South America did really well at TI. Only problem, and I haven't looked into this at all other than what I've heard first or secondhand, that there's some sort of civil war happening right now in Peru. And
I don't think it's officially happening, but I think it's a real possibility that it could happen.
Okay.
Peru is very politically unstable right now.
Civil war might not be the right term, but something's happening.
Yeah, I mean, there's something happening now, and it could lead to civil war, is the concern. Mm. And obviously, with something like this, I mean, if this major were to happen, we know that it wouldn't happen until in a couple of months into next year. But if anything like this does develop in Peru, I think... I mean, what do you do, right? You surely can't host the event while there's a fucking civil war going on. So I just hope that if this... I mean, first of all, I hope that things get resolved in the country and this doesn't turn into an absolute huge issue, which it sounds like it already is, but hopefully things get sorted out in a reasonably peaceful way. But if they don't, and we do get into a really shitty situation, I hope this... from a Dota perspective, doesn't just end up with a canceled major. I hope that this time we have a plan B and we go somewhere else. And God forbid that we force the tournament to happen if people are at risk. Then, because a lot of players will probably, you know, some players, if there's a risk of something in the country, will just choose not to participate. Others might not have the same luxury because they really need the chance, they need the money. I hope the players don't get put in a position where they have to choose. That's the main thing for me. And I mean, do we have any examples of this in the past in Dota?
Maybe there's something that I can't think of, but for me personally, it was Artifact. Or was it Underlords? Mm-hmm. I don't remember. But it was visiting, or it was doing a tournament in Ukraine when they declared, like the day I was leaving, they declared martial law because Russia was... This was years ago. This is 2018 or something. Russia was like, you know, they kept going over the border, like breaking the rules or whatever, trying to instigate things, but never escalated to anything until recently. So that's the closest that I've experienced. And it was the whole time, it's like the Ukrainians were like, nah, that this happens all the time. It's no big deal. So I felt okay about it, I guess. But still scary. Still scary.
Of course. I mean, I guess the closest we've had in Dota is probably a tournament being canceled because of COVID, right? So that was also with the perspective of keeping the players safe, but also the audience and just in general running the whole show when COVID was really bad. I believe that was the
LA.
It was
major.
An NA major that got canceled, right?
LA,
right. So, I mean, we have canceled tournaments before over concerns. That one was a health concern. I mean, this one would be as well if there's a literal fucking war. Your health is staying alive. So, but yeah, let's hope it doesn't get to that stage. But right now, it does sound worrying if this major were to be in Lima, as this leak indicates. I'm with you, though. I think the whole prospect of an SA major sounds fucking awesome. It's a continent I personally haven't been to before. I don't know if you have. I think you haven't either, right?
No, nope. Mexico is the closest.
So we would both really love to go. We would love to go to SA to experience the culture, to, you know, have a major there to meet the fans, but not under conditions like that. So fingers crossed. But yeah, I got to admit, I'm not, you know me as a positive guy, I'm not overly optimistic about this, to be honest, with what I'm hearing. Like, It doesn't sound great right now in Peru. So for everything to turn around within the next 2 months, we'll see.
We will see. Hopefully it works out, because like you said, I mean, I don't know if we would be invited to something like that, but if we were, that would be really hype, because South America fans and like SEA fans, those are like the two hypest regions probably if you had to pick. So, and the fact that it's never been done in Dota from like, especially like the English side, that would be so cool. Third topic, also South America related, all the news coming out today, all this week, I should say. So Bowie recently made a twit longer and kind of talking about some concerns that he has about the SA DPC. I'm going to quote one of the things he says. I can say with certainty that the region I have been dedicating the last 3 years of my life might not have a stream that lives up to the potential because the organizer for the SA English DPC won't be paying the casters to do it. So there's a lot of stuff he said in this post, but what do you think of that? Do you think that that's true? I mean, he's a pretty credible source. And if that's true, what are your thoughts? Because that sounds... Here's the thing, right? Valve has certain requirements for every DPC region. They have to cover English. I don't know what all languages they have to do, but they have to do X amount of languages. I think they may have expanded, I'm not sure. Whether it needs to be in person or not, I don't know the rules, because I know for English, like for NA DPC or EU, they have to be... There has to be a studio where they're physically there. Like remote only was not okay. They had to kind of just let people do what they wanted for COVID because of obviously COVID, but now that's kind of gone. People aren't as concerned anymore. That's not as much of a thing. So in terms of like what actual restriction or what their policies are for something like this, I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure either if this is something that is just is going to be enforced by Valve, that this has to happen. But I mean, there's different ways of doing this kind of broadcasting, right? One is that the organizer of the DPC obviously gets the right to the tournament. They get it bestowed by Valve to run that part of the tournament. And once you have that, you can either pay people to cast your tournament out of the money that you have raised from sponsorships or whatever, or you can sell the broadcasting rights, or you can offer the broadcasting rights, just making them open. Like if you're in the position where you can't pay people, something you can do is be like, we need the games cast. That's a requirement from Valve. Unfortunately, you can't pay because we don't have the funds for it in the setup that there is. But that means that whoever wants to cover the games is allowed to. Or there can be some sort of bidding or whatever. I don't know the specifics about this. The way I interpret it is not that whoever is working these games will do them for free, because I don't think, especially not established talent that don't really need to prove itself as much, would accept that in any way. You know, maybe some up-and-coming casters that really need the exposure would work for free. I personally think you should not do that, but some people probably would. But I think this, if this is true, and if this does pan out this way, I think it's going to just be different, right? Where instead of the organizer paying talent to cast their games, they're going to offer up the broadcasting rights, and there's going to be some other arrangement where, let's say, casters get to cast the games, but then they can get their own sponsors on the English coverage of it, so that casters can, you know, get together and be like, hey, let's, this essay at DPC is up for grabs, basically. Let's cast them and get a sponsor on it, and that way we can pay ourselves, right? Something like that. It's definitely not ideal, but if that is the only way the tournament can be run, and I mean, what do you do, right?
Well, I think
either you do it like that, or you roll back it and you say, okay, you guys can't have the tournament anymore from Valve's perspective, and then they need to find another org that runs it within 2 months.
Yeah, that this seems the reason this crazy, is hard right? to really gauge or to judge is because I don't know all the specifics. Meaning, how many people bid for South America?
Right.
If there's some of the people like ESL, if they would have been okay with South America, for example, I don't think this was the case, but I'm just throwing out a name. They would mm-hmm. obviously be able to pay talent.
Yeah.
So then why are you choosing somebody else? If that wasn't the case, if this was the only bid, then I guess there's no choice, right?
I mean, the other thing is let's say you make the bid, right? And they get chosen to run SA, and then it turns out that some round of funding they were counting on backed out, or they made a mistake and their assessment of how much things would cost was off, and now they're like, shit, we can't afford this. We didn't think casters cost this much, or we didn't think running the tournament was this expensive. Mm. And then you can just write it up to, okay, well, then they're just not professional enough, which is fair. But at the end of the day, if that is the case, we're back to square one. What do you do? Like, do you just say, okay, you guys can't run this tournament because you don't have the funds from Valve's perspective? We will get someone else. Well, who's going to jump on this, run and organize it with how long until the SADPC starts? Like 3 weeks? Like how are you, like, who do you get? So
I think part of it depends on when that happens. Cause I think for instances like GESC, where they never paid anybody and they ran two tournaments mm-hmm. on official DPC circuit, Valve should be paying everybody. That's a joke. That's a fucking joke. Mm-hmm. 100%. I mean, I wasn't in either of those tournaments, so it's not affecting me directly, but that, like, I would be livid. Like, it's not even about how much money it is at that point. It's the principle. Like, mm-hmm. you okayed, they literally sent an application, you okayed it, you are technically responsible for them paying. That's just how it is. You might not like mm-hmm. it, plus the fact that, you know, in terms of the money actually being spent, it's like a drop in the bucket for Valve, but for a situation like this, I don't know if that's the same, honestly. Just because I don't know how many people are actually interested in running SADPC, or we talked about NADPC being the least desirable, mm-hmm. which is crazy. And the crazy thing about the South American one is the teams are mega hype now. You got EG in the region, you have Alliance in the region. Like,
yep.
South America has never been this hot before. And now apparently casters can't be paid. So again, we're missing a certain part of this conversation where we can't really judge it, but yeah, it sucks. Hopefully it works out where somebody, like, if they give the rights for free or something to whoever, that they can find sponsors themselves and then pay the people that they actually have casting. Cause like I said, I don't know what the requirements from Valve are. Cause I heard at some point it was in person, like I said, but if they're not paying casters, then I don't know how, like, it has to be remote, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't see it not being remote. So, just strange.
Yeah, and again, depending on whether that is within the rules or not of what it takes to run these DPC leagues, then
yeah, maybe
that
it's
might
changed.
Not even be an option.
Maybe the rules have changed as well. I have no clue.
But you're right. If it has to be in a studio and a multi-camera production or whatever, then the probability and the possibilities of casters running it themselves, like, it starts getting a lot more expensive when you need to have an actual studio set up. So then the perspective of the thing I mentioned before, where the casters are just like, all right, we're going to try to get this tournament and run it ourselves. It gets a lot more complex when you add more layers to that, because then not only do you need the studio, you need some sort of physical studio with a setup, you need someone to operate it and produce it, which is another person, basically, or at least another person. That's an absolute minimal production. That's like some JJ tier shit. And
you're making it sound
you have
bad.
All the transport expenses, you have all the hotels expenses. No, it's more like... It's more like being a one-man producer for the DPC is kind of like Superman-ish and should not be expected. That literally
other than
one
JJ.
Person just does all of that. Exactly. So he's done stuff like this before. But yeah. I mean, I guess we'll see. Okay, just to finish off on the whole GESC thing, now that you brought it up, to play Mega Devil's Advocate
here.
Oh,
here we go. Here we fucking
or
go
rather,
again. Jesus Christ.
Okay, you know I like to do this. You know I like to think about things from different perspectives. Okay, rather than... Let me present the idea. Do you think Valve will not foot the bill? From what I know, they tried to get... If I'm not mistaken, I think they sued GESC.
Okay.
But I think there was something about local regulations or laws or whatever, or... Law can be a fucking mess sometimes, as everybody knows. So I think it ended in nothing, right? Because otherwise things would have been paid. So I think the GESC people, quote unquote, got away with it from what I know. From Valve's perspective, if you foot the bill fully at that point and you're like, fuck it, these guys, they fucking got us, you know? Do you feel like from their perspective, they're like, we're opening up ourselves to be exploited more in the future if we show that we're just going to cover up for people that scam others?
Okay.
And? Do you think, is that, no, I'm just saying, is that a reasonable, obviously the player, I agree 100% the people need to get paid. And so, if you can't sue them, you can't do anything. Like, what do you do? I get it. And I agree 100%. And I personally
that,
also agree that Valve should pay if the
that,
others
okay.
got away with it or whatever.
I think
but,
that they like, think... They think it's reasonable, but, and I actually think when you're putting it that way, on some level, that is reasonable, but then you have to outweigh people that are putting their blood, sweat, tears, and semen into the scene.
Yes, as we all are.
They put in a lot of hard work, and they don't get paid for something like this. Yeah, it fucking sucks. Yeah, it feels like you got scammed. You're a billion-dollar company. Just fucking pay them, for God's sake. It's ridiculous.
Right.
No, there's no excuse. Dumb as fuck.
I mean, like I said, I agree with you. The people should be paid, and if there's no other way, then it should be Valve. I'm just entertaining the idea that this might be their line of thought, that they don't want to open themselves up to this just being a common thing, where it's like, oh, well, we can just say we'll run it, and then if something goes wrong, we'll just back out, and Valve has to pay the bill. Because it's already happened before, so why wouldn't it happen again, right?
It happened with one company.
Like, hopefully that isn't the case. And I mean, again, let's not make this into a thing where this is like happens all the time. Because like you said, it happened, to our knowledge, at least in DPC, in the realms of DPC, it happened literally once, right? With one company.
Yeah.
So most companies that run this shit are legit and they're genuine about it, at least for the most part.
If you think about it from the other side, though, which is tournament organizer, captain's draft, literally the same year, I paid my entire bank account to make sure the tournament happened and get paid. I haven't even paid back everything yet, apparently, which I'm just finding out now. Still owed a little bit of money. And I wasn't sure I was going to get the money back to begin with anyway. If I had known that... You didn't have to pay people. I could have just kept the money and just not paid anybody, right? Think of it from the other side. Like, doesn't it incentivize other companies to say, fuck it. If they didn't have to pay, why do I? Of course, you'd be blackballed and never be in the scene again, but a lot of these companies are never in the scene again anyway, right?
Right.
So there's more elements to it, I think. Anyway, yeah, I don't know how we got off on that, but hopefully things work out for everybody.
Yep.
SAP segment.
Oh, what a transition.
SAP segment. Activate. All right, Sinner, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Since TI7...
I got a wrong answer for you. Yeah.
Since TI7, which team has spent the most total gold on supports. Okay.
Okay.
Is it PSG, LGD, TNC Predator, Team Liquid, OG?
So this includes TI7, right?
Yes.
Out of the four teams you mentioned, did any of them play all the TIs except LGD? Did OG play a TI7?
Yeah, they did. I'm sure they did.
So
yeah.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11. PSG LGD out of those four teams is the one that consistently got the farthest, which would average out to them having the most games, which would average out to them paying the most. I'm just going to say that. PSG LGD.
Okay, that is incorrect.
How? Is it actually OG?
I know. OG is ninth. That was a red herring. Ninth.
What?
They're ninth. Hope I didn't do this stat wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
Wait, how the fuck is that possible?
So, third. Okay, what were my choices? Because I actually mixed it up this time. OG was like ninth or something like that. Team Liquid was seventh. PSG LGD was second.
Can't with Predator first.
4.32 million is PSG LGD. And first with 4.37 million was TNC Predator.
For all TIs since TI7.
TI7, yeah.
I mean, surely this can't be right.
Use the tool right now. Look it up.
Like, did TNC Predator just like spam by sentries when they lost or something?
I don't know. This was shocking to me as well. That's why I put it in here. TNC, PSG, Vici. Does that sound right? Maybe I did this wrong. And then Fnatic are the top four. I wanted to give you a juicy one.
Wait, did TNC play some sort of really extended TI-related shit?
I don't know.
Like, because maybe there's like... I have to admit, I don't know if this counts qualifiers as well. Or if it's only main event TI like group stage tournament,
true.
Right?
That's true.
Because if it counts the whole, everything that falls under the TI umbrella, including qualifiers, TNC might have played some like insane qualifiers to get there. And that could have ramped up their points enough that they could beat them.
I'm using the tool right now again just to double check that I didn't fuck this up.
This is like unbelievable. How many TNC weren't even at all TI since TI7, right?
Yeah, just...
They weren't at the last one.
Just trust me, okay?
Or?
So support, gold spent, right?
Yeah.
Team, TNC Predator. That's what it says. I'm gonna trust SAP on this one. It sounds weird, but that's what it says.
That's... Okay. I'm wrong.
Congratulations, Sindarin.
I would honestly, I would love to see the breakdown of this. Now I'm way more curious, but we can't look into the details of that, like where the gold comes from. But that sounds crazy to me that they could beat.
I'm just
LGD
happy that you ended on a loss, just like we began.
Yeah. I mean, that's standard. So now it's your turn to also end on a loss. Which hero has killed most couriers at TIs? Including TI5. So we're starting TI5 and then beyond.
Okay. Most
Which
couriers
hero killed,
killed
most couriers? Is it A, Tiny, B, Weaver, C, Nature's Prophet, or D, Bounty Hunter?
Oh my god, that's hard. Why would Tiny be there? Is it fucking Tiny, you piece of garbage? Alright, Bounty was the first hero I thought of. So it can't be that because he's barely picked. Nature's Prophet's a great option. Weaver is picked a decent amount, but I'm going to say no. So it's either Nature's Prophet or Tiny, which is randomly in there. Is that a red herring? Am I overthinking this? And I've already eliminated the correct answer. I'm going to say...
Surely that can't be the case.
I'm going to say Tiny randomly.
That is correct!
Yes! Yes!
What? Fun fact, I listed them in order.
Oh. Very
Tiny has the most kills, Weaver has second, Nature's Prophet has third, and Bounty has fourth. And Tiny wins by quite the landslide, no pun intended.
Because he can throw his tree at it.
Yep, tree throw, played as a four, played as a carry, so a lot of couriers are flying by him sometimes, and he just kills them. So And I think you're spot on with a bounty hunter. Bounty hunter might have most courier kills per game, but the hero hasn't been picked nearly as much as Tiny at TI. So, yeah, Tiny wins. And you win. Congratulations.
Yes.
You're right.
Here's another thing I was right about. The last week's question, what team hero combination has the most picks in TI? Correct answer, there's two, both with 38 games played. LGD Earthshaker and EG Mirana. I said LGD Earthshaker. You said LGD Rubik, which ranks 13 with 26 games played. Get
wrecked.
Wait,
you beat the community?
I beat the... Yes, shout out to Michael Died. What the... who got the incorrect answer.
I don't know how to pronounce
the
name. It might be Michel Died.
All right, Michel Died.
Or it might
Died.
Be Michel Died.
He just copied your answer and said PSG LGD Rubik, and somehow he's our shout out. Should have shouted me out on this one. What is this garbage? Jesus. Goodness
LGD
gracious.
Shaker.
Yeah. Lots of memories with their Earthshaker.
Oh, wait. Now I remember this. We had a conversation about this, and I was like, it's probably LGD Shaker, and you said the same thing, and then I picked another one.
No. Okay. I remember this vividly because this was like 3 days ago. Now that you're sick, but you're not dead quite yet. I said Earthshaker, and I said, who plays the most Earthshaker? You said LGD. So I'm like, okay, LGD Earthshaker. Like,
and
oh,
then I think
that's
I was like,
such
fuck,
a good
that's
answer.
What I wanted to pick.
No, because I said Earthshaker. I brought it up because
yeah,
you
and
brought
I
up
can't
a different
pick the
hero.
Same as you. And I was like, fuck, it's got to be that.
God, I'm good.
And then I was like, I guess I'll take Rubik. That's definitely how it went down. I remember this very clearly.
Yes. Only a few.
Right, I just
ago.
Checked the chat. Literally everyone is spamming. There's like hundreds of messages saying Cinda's right. That's what happened.
Hundreds. Yeah. Little shout out message from SAP here. This was the last SAP segment for now. We love how you, the community, still interacts with the segment via comments and what interesting questions you have come up with. If people still have that hunger for stats, we might return next year. We measure this on the amount of questions that will be under this episode on YouTube, tagged with hashtag SAP Esports, especially which kind of stat you would like to hear about that focuses on a single league or tournament in the upcoming year, as in which kind of stat you'd be interested in for each league/tournament, not as in a specific tournament to be named. You can ask for stats of players, teams, heroes, items, etc. Just type something to the effect of hashtag SAP Esports and anything like most aggressive team with most average hero damage in the first 10 minutes over a tournament. You guys can be creative. But also other general Dota 2 pro stat questions are welcome. And if you like solving problems, solve the ones SAP haven't thought of yet. Check out SAP's various open positions in sales, development, and technology and consulting at jobs.sap.com or by clicking the link in the description below. So thanks again to SAP for sponsoring all these episodes thus far. If you guys want more of these episodes, more of these segments, then like they said, just put hashtag SAP Esports in the comments and type, because that helps us. And hopefully us getting helped helps you feel like a good, clean
person. We need
person.
Help.
Especially Sindarin, who can barely remember the other fucking day somehow. my God, what's wrong with you? Okay, a bit of catch up here. I'd like to talk about Ability Arena, if you don't mind. I feel weird.
Yeah.
I feel weird talking about my game. It's like self-advertisement, but it's something I'm very passionate about. Hopefully people find it interesting. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what the comments say. So season 3 came out 2 weeks ago. we obviously
Sorry.
Had the tournament, which we talked about last week. I wanted to talk about all the new stuff that we have and things that I've learned, because, you know, as a game designer, I feel actually more like a game designer now. Saying that doesn't cringe me out, because now this is my third mod, and with each one, I've learned so fucking much that the next one got better, the next one got better, and now we're at Ability Arena, which I'm really happy with. I think there's certain elements of it that we didn't really grasp. Like, if we had it the way that it is, like, right now, this moment, from the beginning, I think it would be doing way... I mean, it's doing fine right now, but it would be doing way better, but... There's no way for us to have known that without learning what this last couple months have taught us, which a lot of it is monetization, because we didn't really have much experience with that kind of stuff. So the big change, which the biggest thing that people complained about with the monetization which again, we're not done with any of this stuff. Like, we're going to continue to take feedback and try to make things feel better. But before, you would open a chest, you get a random god, and you could get duplicates. And if you got a duplicate, you get like 25% of the gold back. People said they hated this. It felt really bad. So we deleted that chest, and we put all of the quote-unquote paid gods into this mega chest called the Galaxy God Chest, number one. And we made it like Dota. So you're guaranteed, as you're picking them, or as you're opening them, to get every common god that you don't have yet. And then there's three rare gods that have escalating odds. So it's literally just copy-pasting Dota. And so far, people have been much more receptive to this. And obviously, like I said, I wish we had done this from the beginning, but I mean, it's a small... No, we're like an indie team, right? Very small team of people.
What happens now if you open a hero you already have, or a god you already have then?
What do you mean?
So you said you can't do that anymore, but that the chest has escalating odds and there's chance of getting rares.
Yeah.
So in Dota, in order to get all the rares, you're going to get many, many duplicates along the way.
Yep.
So what happens here?
Well, in Dota, you don't get the duplicates until you have the whole chest of commons.
Yeah. So also, it's the same as that.
That's the same.
Okay, got it. You're right.
And then
you can't roll duplicates until you have all. Yeah.
Right, and then we kept the system where when you get a duplicate, because to get a golden card of every god, you need to either, it's like a point system up to 100. So 1 point is if you get top four with the god in the game, and then 5 points you get if you get a duplicate. So there is incentive to like boost this to get a golden version of the card. Sure. So that's the big change from the season three. And then we came out with a shit ton of gods, which I was hoping we could quickly talk about, Sinner. I know some of them, I don't know which ones you played, actually. So
I played Santa. I played GLaDOS in... So I played Santa Grievel. I played GLaDOS in testing.
Okay.
I played Boneless Aghanim once in the tournament as well. I played Cave Johnson once in the tournament.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about, and again, this is a lot of new gods, so this is probably the longest AA segment we're going to have ever, but the Battle Pass god is Santa Grievel, and it's basically Hades-inspired. So as the Santa Grievel, every time you fight somebody, you don't do anything. Like, there's an automatic gift exchange, and the enemy can accept or decline it. It's up to them. It doesn't affect you whether they accept or deny it. But for you... you will auto-accept your own gifts, essentially. So if you win, you get a good gift. If you lose, you get a bad gift. If the enemy accepts, they will get a good gift if they win and a bad gift if they lose. If they decline, they get nothing. So it's just up to them. Mm-hmm. But the gift is 4 buffs that show up on the screen, and they're divided into different categories like getting tanky or spell casting or physical damage, something of that nature. And then there's random ones like there's rares. You get 3 random buffs. But these are buffs that will last the entire game. And like I said, it's very Hades inspired. And people, I think this has been like the strongest reaction we've gotten from like a positive aspect from a god release so far. Did you like playing it, Sindarin?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
This one was a huge risk. So this is like one of those, me and Jenkins just sitting at the major, the Arlington major, coming up with stupid-ass god ideas, going back and forth. We should make Santa Claus! And we would just go back and forth on ideas. And this one, it took a full month to make this one character because he's so complicated code-wise that we didn't have that much time to actually test. So it was one of those that was a huge risk because no matter what, because we have a terrain and everything made for it ahead of time, this was part of the battle pass no matter what. Mm-hmm. And... we didn't have any idea if it was going to be fucking awful or not. But this one is quite possibly my favorite god that we've ever come out with. Love him. There's GLaDOS, which is Jenkins' god. He's going to get a redesign probably for the next season. You create 2 portals on 2 units, and they share HP and mana. So there's a lot of cool interactions with, like, you know, doubling up your strength with, like, Heavenly Grace or keeping yourself alive with False Promise or... any heals, any, like, you have a frontliner that's really tanky and then a backliner that's life stealing, right? So they both share in the HP department. So there's a lot of cool interactions with that. Boneless Aghanim, you don't get ultimates ever, but you get a bigger shop. So people that really like playing regular Aghanim, where you get a lot of ultimates, this is a god for you. He is getting a big buff today, which I'll talk about in just a moment. Going forward, Lifestealer. Oh, I should say, people that had Lifestealer before out of chests, they ended up getting Boneless instead, so it literally replaced it. And then the new Lifestealer is a free god, and the unit that you select when it gets to half HP will auto-infest into a random unit. And kind of like the Ags effect from Lifestealer, where you attack X amount of times, and it's based on your shop level. So this one is a lot more fun than the old Lifestealer, which was deleted from the game. This was another god that people really seem to enjoy, so I'm happy about that one. Our temporary god, which I think we're going to make permanent eventually, which with a different name, is Chaos God Season 3. I don't think you played this one.
No, I didn't. I don't think I've played this a single time.
This one, I'm surprised that people like, because I was worried that people would really dislike this one. But it's pretty simple. It's just a shop god. You get one free reroll every round, your spells sell for full value, and your body rerolls are one less. That's it. So it's an economy god. Mm-hmm. You can buy out the entire shop, sell it, and lock it. Like, there's a lot of interesting stuff that you can do that you can't do with any other god. So that one's interesting. And then the three rares for the chest are Cave Johnson, like you mentioned. Cave Johnson, you have a debuff on your whole team, you cannot heal. I was playing this today, and I kept fucking it. It's actually hard to play.
It's really hard.
You cannot heal at all. So borrow time, purificate, none of it. You can't use, like, lifesteal, nothing works. So there's no point in getting those most of the time. But depending on what attribute your bodies are, they gain a buff. So if you're strength, you get 30% damage reduction. If you're agility, you get your base attack time reduced by 25%. And if you're an int hero, your spells don't cost mana. Like, you always have 100% mana. So there's a lot of cool combos you can come up with that seem really broken, but again, you can't heal. So this one was another kind of experimental one that people seem to actually like quite a bit, because there's a lot of cool combos. So
I believe one of the combos that was ridiculous with this that I saw played was getting mana shield on Cave Johnson, because since your spells don't cost mana, the hero that you put mana shield on, if it was an int hero with mana shield, the only way it dies is losing the health corresponding, because mana shield doesn't block 100% of damage while you have mana, but it blocks most of it.
70%.
Yeah, so a frontlining int hero like Ogre or Darkseer or whatever was stupidly tanky with mana shield in this. So that was pretty powerful. That was the most broken thing I saw with it, I think.
I wish you hadn't brought that up, Syndrome, because I would consider this a technical bug that is very hard to fix, so we're just not going to do anything unless it was really needed. Because
I mean, I don't know if it's overpowered, because like, well, I think the god is really hard to play regardless.
It is, but it's, you don't lose mana. That's the problem. That's the weird thing. So you're always getting, you can get level 1 mana shield, 70% reduction.
Yeah.
That's broken. But
could change the scaling of mana shield
just for this god. Yeah. Last, I mean, two gods, there's another Aghanim joining the fold, the bath time Aghanim. I always have trouble explaining this one. So, God, how do I explain this? It'll upgrade.
I can explain this for you.
Okay, please.
If you want. So at the beginning of every round.
Yeah.
So when combat starts, one single spell gets upgraded to a tier higher. So it can go from super to Gaben or regular to super. And the spell that gets upgraded is random, but it needs to be within the interval where it can get upgraded. So if you have a spell that's between level 6 and 8, that one qualifies to be upgraded to Gaben. If you have a spell that's between level 1 and 2, it can be upgraded to level 3. And if you have a spell that's between level 3 and 5, it can be upgraded to the super version. So it can go like, can bump up one tier effectively from what it is. The spell chosen is random, and it's only for the round itself, so you lose the bonus afterwards. It doesn't permanently stay upgraded.
Yeah.
So the strategy with this one is to try to set up your strategy so that in a way you get, like, let's say you have one super spell only in your team, you know that spell is a Gaben every round, right, once your shop level is high enough. Yeah, and that's how it works. It's tied to your shop level, so you need higher shop levels to get the Gaben unlocks, but that's it.
Wow, okay. That was again, really well done. I stumble on this one so much, I don't know why. But this is a cool god.
It's cool.
People like this one as well. And then this one might be tied. This is the last one. Sorry for everybody that's sick and tired of this talk. This is the other god with Santa Grievel. These are my two favorite gods now, is Techies. Holy shit. This guy is so cool. He has three abilities, which... Okay, let's see if I can do a good job explaining this. So there's three Techies, right? There's three characters within this one. There's Squee, Spoon, and Spleen. And by default, you don't get anything. But when you upgrade to level 2, 4, and 5 shop, one of those characters becomes part of your god with their ability that comes with it. So, and you don't know which one it's going to be, which is the coolest part about this god, because then you have to build based on what you're getting. So level 2 shop, one of these three abilities, which there's the Sticky Bomb, which is based off of how much magic damage. So all of these are active. So you can put them on the same unit, or you can separate them onto three different, you can mix and match however you want. So the first one, Sticky Bomb, you deal 350 magic damage with that unit, and a level 2 Sticky Bomb will attach to the person that you're, or the area that you've been casting spells. So if you have like Mystic Flare, which is doing ridiculous damage, like immediately you'll get like 2 Sticky Bombs attached. So that's the magic damage one. Then there's Reactive Taser, which you usually put on the tank, or you could combine it with the Proximity Mine, which I'll get to. But there's a 15% chance when getting attacked to trigger a level 1 Reactive Taser. So you get this, and it's an immediate thing. So immediately it'll just blow up, and it'll disarm everybody in that area, and we put an 8-second cooldown on it. Mm-hmm. And then the final one is Proximity Mine, where there's, on attack, there's a 15% chance to lay a level 1 Proximity Mine that does half damage. So, and it's directly in front of you, which I think is really interesting, because it incentivizes you to put it on a melee hero a lot of the time. But if you put it on a range, you can, and you're just dropping these turds right where you stand, and if somebody backline jumps you, they just instantly die. Well, not instantly, but they take a shit ton of damage. Mm-hmm. This god is so fucking cool, if I do say so myself, because every game feels totally different because you have no idea what spell is going to unlock. So this is another one I'm extremely happy with.
And the Proximity Mine has no cooldown.
Correct.
So if you put this on a unit that has a lot of attack speed, it makes a lot of mines.
Focus fire, yes.
Oh my god. That's...
Sleight of Fist, technically. I don't know where the mines land with Sleight, though, because we changed how Sleight works a bit. But yeah, so new god system to unlock them feels better. A bunch of new gods as well. And the last thing I'll talk about is today, technically, which is the 15th, we're coming out with version 3.5, which will include a bunch of new stuff. Balance-wise, we're going to go a little bit easy now because people are thinking updates are too fast, but there's going to be a new god coming out today that will be free for everybody. So if you guys are excited about that, and the thing I'm most excited about, which I don't think is going to be today, but it'll be the next day, Buka has been working on, and when I say Buka has been working on something, you know it's going to be fucking good. If you guys remember Artifaction... There were Artifaction, Sindarin?
By name?
It was a website that me, Slacks, Cyborg Matt, Buka, and Knoxville were a part of. And it was like a news coverage website for Artifact. We had a cool section where you could look at... It was basically a wiki, but a really nice looking one. And something that Buka made was so fucking good that I just made him redo it for us. And it, for Artifact, it was a card creation system where on the website you can go and create your create any card, put any art, whatever, any description, and you can share it with people. So we're going to do that for gods, and we're going to have a contest where
$1,000
is on the line. Three winners are picked, which divide the money up, and we're going to put, well, if they're good enough, we're going to put them in the game. So we're hoping that a bunch of people will create some gods, and I love this shit. And we picked them on stream. I'm really excited. Stuff like this.
That's good.
I wish Dota did. Puck was one of the original community created heroes. Obviously, it's changed, but that was like the big inspiration from back in the day. And I don't know why they haven't done it very much or ever since then.
Yeah,
I think involving the community is great with stuff like this.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how... This is many years ago, back in Dota 1. We're talking like 15 years ago, probably. But I think there was, on the Play Dota forums, I think it was like an official competition. I don't know.
I think so.
If it was a, I think it was a contest, right? Where people could submit ideas, not just, hey guys, here's a thread, submit your hero ideas and we might do something. I think they literally made a contest and they were like, the best one out of all of these you guys submit... We're going to take it. We might change it slightly to make it more interesting and better, but we will use this idea. Mm-hmm. I think this was Ice Frog running Dota at the time. I think Puck was under him, not under Ginsu.
I believe it was Ice Frog.
So fucking long ago. But yeah, I agree. I think it's awesome. And I think in a game like Dota, or and by extension, a game like Ability Arena, there's so much complexity and so much depth and so much sandboxing you can do that... It's like limitless with what ideas you can come up with. That's why it's so cool to have people involved and give their own takes. So I'm a huge fan of this idea of yours. That's great. And I wish they did in Dota as well.
I agree. And I can see Val's perspective on some level because I'm feeling the same way to a degree. Like there's going to be a bunch of ideas that we already had, that we already had planned. And people are going to think we took their ideas, which... There's no way around that. Like we have literally like 50 gods that we've written down and a lot of them we want to use at some point. So obviously that's going to, you know, align with what some of the submissions will be. But again, no real way around that. So, but yeah, I'm excited, man. I am so excited about this.
I mean, there is a way around it technically.
And what's that?
Which would be to let the community vote on the ideas themselves. But the problem with that is that then it can become a popularity contest among like who has the biggest social groups and whatnot.
Yeah, I think
it's like literally just like who has most followers on Twitter. Go vote on my idea. It's the best.
Well, it's a combination of things. There's that aspect. There's also like we want to be the ones to pick it because sometimes stuff that people suggest is literally impossible or very difficult to the point where it's not worth doing. But yeah, should be good. Should be good.
Yep.
All right. There were some announcements for some games at the Game Award. There's so many of these Game Award ceremony thingies. I can't differentiate them. But the one that I was watching was pretty cool because they had so many trailers and announcements, and it was barely any like, and this game won Best Anal Glands of the Season. Like, that stuff cringes me out. I don't know if you guys feel the same, but this was like all trailers and stuff. That was pretty hype. Hades 2 was announced, Sindarin. I am mega excited. Did they say a date?
I don't think so.
So I would assume 2023.
Maybe it's 2023. Early access 2023.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they didn't say whether the game will be available in 2023 fully, so...
So the character that it's going to be based around is going to be Zagreus's sister, Melano... I don't know how to say it. Princess of the Underworld. And so she'll be the protagonist. And she, they wrote, like, what she... What was it? A witch and sorceress with powerful magic abilities. And then the thing that made it even cooler is the villain... will be Kronos. Do you know anything about mythology, Greek mythology?
Yeah.
You did play Hades, so...
yeah. Kronos, I also knew some before that.
Kronos is fucking cool. I think... What's the name? Is it Titans, I think, right?
Yeah.
He's part of the Titans, and he's like the original, and he's like the
OG.
The father of Zeus and all the other gods, like Hades. He obviously is time-related. Sounds awesome, man. They didn't really give that much information, but it's still going to be single player only, which I'm trying to think, how would you like make this multiplayer? Is there a way? Anyway, yeah. I wasn't really disappointed.
You definitely couldn't make this game multiplayer.
I wasn't really disappointed with that because the first game was just so fucking good that I would love to play another version of it. And I think the only complaint that I had, which is the same for a lot of games, I'm not a big fan of this, like, you beat the game for the most part and you need to replay it with harder difficulty settings. I don't like that. It's like an artificial, I don't know, like weight. You know, I don't know what I don't like about it, but I just never like the heat system in this. Like I said, there's many games that use it that I just don't. I don't feel incentivized to play anymore after that point.
I mean, think about it from this perspective. It's something extra from the people that want it, and if that's not you, that's fine.
Yeah, true.
It's a challenge mode. It's New Game Plus. That's as old as, I don't know. I don't know what the first game that had New Game Plus was. Even Diablo 1 from like 1997 had multiple difficulty settings. It had like normal, which you play through the story, and then you could play the same game again on Nightmare and Hell difficulty, which had the exact same quests, the exact same enemies, they were just stronger. So you needed to be stronger. So, I think the
problem is there's some storyline still unlockable, right? That you have to kind of grind at that point.
It's extremely minimal what you can unlock by only playing Heat, right? It's literal, if I'm not mistaken, the only things you can only unlock by playing Heat is the statues that Skelly has, right? Everything else you can unlock by still
hopefully
playing.
This isn't a spoiler for anybody.
Difficulty
so
level zero.
I'm not going to talk about the story, but okay. In the, you know,
was there stuff where you have to play Heat?
There's an area. So you know where you pick your weapon with the skeleton guy?
Yeah.
Okay, I need to know some answers, by the way, because I never played it after this point, after the Heat started. There's like a blanket or whatever covering over this area.
Yeah.
What is that? And then what's the story with the skeleton guy? That's what I need to know.
So the skeleton guy, like when you, I must admit, I didn't do the final challenge. So the way you unlock those, like get those, pull away the curtains is by beating the game on as high a heat setting as it requires or higher.
Yeah, 7, I think it was for me.
And literally what you get is just a shiny statue there. It's like literally just to show off, hey, I did this.
Okay, great.
So there's no real added story element. It's just Skelly's like, hey, look at this cool statue you got. I'm assuming that's also what you get behind the third and final one where you need to beat the game on Heat. I don't remember what it was, like 32, I think.
Mm.
And I think the highest run I did was 24 or 25. And then I did multiple attempts on 32. I didn't do it. And I kind of just stopped playing at some point. Not because I gave up, but I just did other stuff. And then, you know, you don't necessarily.
Rating,
really
wow. Yeah, we know. We know the answer.
But that game was fucking amazing. I think overall it's my favorite indie game from the last decade, probably. Just like so many things are really good about it. The gameplay is super smooth. It's really fun. The story was great. The voice acting was spectacular for an indie game. Like really fucking good. The artwork is amazing. Like this game was a 10 out of 10 for me, which doesn't happen very often, right? Like it's just really fucking good. If you haven't played this game, you need to play Hades. And I also just think, so this isn't a genre that appeals to everyone, but I do think people that don't necessarily like roguelikes that much might still really enjoy this one because of the story element and the way that you build up. Because I think a lot of roguelikes are pretty flat in terms of story. Like it's some sort of basic thrown together shit just to give your character some sort of motivation to do something. But in this one, it's super fleshed out. The relationship between characters, the way you step by step learn things about the other characters in the game, the way you build relationships with them, the way they build relationships with each other. It's just very, it's really impressive what they managed to do with this game. So yeah, I can only really recommend
playing it. They have as many employees as Valve too. They have 20 people working on this now.
Yep.
And they're an indie company, by the way.
It's really impressive. Now the thing about that is that when you make such a banger of a number one, it's really hard to match in a sequel. So I'm going in with the expectations that Hades 2 will be worse because I think it will be hard to beat the first one. But of course I'm going to play this game. Like, when the first game is that good, you got
to
play this.
I mean, how much needs to be different, though? Like, because they're not going to blow you away like before, right? That's literally impossible, I think. But I think slight improvements across the board based... Use the old game as a foundation, slight improvements, and I'll be very happy with that.
I mean, technically what Hades is an expansion of Bastion. I don't know if you played that game.
No, but people have told me.
Yeah, so Supergiant Games made Bastion, which was also amazing. I've also played that game through.
Like, how is that? Did it have to do with Greek mythology?
No, but the type, like the genre is similar. So Bastion is also a roguelike. And like the, how to say, like the perspective of the game, the way your character does stuff, etc., is similar, but it doesn't have the whole, like, you beat this, now you get choices aspect in the same way as Hades does. So they kind of took elements from Bastion that worked and that people really liked, and then they added on top of it. So my question is, what can they add for Hades 2 that will make it an even better experience than the first one? That's my question. Because I think Hades is a better game than Bastion. I think Bastion was great. I just think Hades is a tier above by far. And yeah, I'm hoping to be blown away, but I think it's really hard to top that one. The initial, like, early artwork that they have shown from Hades 2 is amazing, though. I think especially Nemesis looks fucking amazing in the trailer. I've always thought that their character designs, just the overall artwork when you have a conversation with another character, is, like, again, just 10 out of 10 for me. There's so cool artworks that they're using for the game.
I agree.
So,
I mean, this is as close to a perfect game that I've ever played. So I would agree with you on that.
Super good.
All right, we got one more that Cinderin put here. I have no idea what this game is, if that's a game.
Yeah, so another game was announced, which is supposed to come out in 2024, called Earthblade. And the reason this game is exciting for me is that it's from the creators of Celeste, which I recommended to you last week, I'm sure you've played and loved.
Nope.
This game is also going to be a platformer, but it looks like it will have a different angle, where Celeste was, how to say, it was like a pacifist game. This looks like it has combat. I think to a bigger extent, it's a bit hard to tell from this early, like, alpha trailer exactly what this game wants to fully be in the end. But yeah, Celeste for me was an incredible game. Again, I think most of the great games that have come out in the last decade are honestly just indie games for me, with very few exceptions.
Does that include Valve games? Is Valve an indie company is really the joke I was trying to make.
Oh, got it. Yeah. Sorry, I'm a bit slow today.
That's okay.
But yeah, I'm excited for this. Obviously, it's far away, because this is announced to be released in 2024. I don't know if it will have any early or whatever, but yeah, it's another game to look forward to. If you guys like Celeste, the studio is making another game. It's similar in art style. It's like this pixel style. A little bit more fleshed out, I would say, in graphics than Celeste was, but still keeping true to that overall direction that they did. And yeah, if you like Celeste, there's a good chance this will be a game for you.
This isn't a segment, but I wanted to mention I was quite disappointed that Fable was still not fucking announced. What the fuck is going on, Xbox people? Jesus Christ, I want to play Fable, please. Thank you. You had one more topic here. I don't know what this is.
Yeah, actually, I want to add one more before that. I think we have time. We started a bit late today, so.
Okay, sure.
Because somebody in chat just wrote Diablo 4 question mark. And as you remember, I talked about how this is, from my perspective, Blizzard's final chance at redemption. The game is set to release on June 6th, which is obviously not by chance. That is 6-6. Like, they can't do 6-6-6, but it's as close as they can get.
6-6-22.
6-6-23.
Three.
22 would have been half a year ago.
Fuck!
And they've added some more stuff. Now, what they have released recently, which is quite the controversy, which is already inspiring me with disdain for what this game is going to turn out to be in the end, so that's fucking great.
What, the battle passes?
Yeah, so they announced the editions that you can buy the game in, with like Standard Edition, Deluxe Edition, and Ultimate Edition. And one of the things that they've announced is effectively some sort of a seasonal pass, which, if executed well, could probably be fine. But whenever I hear Blizzard and this, like, seasonal pass, and it sounds like this is going to be, I'm worried that this is going to be more of a cash grab than I had hoped, and that it will very much be pay for fun, similar to Diablo Immortal, which was everything I don't want to play in a video game, so I never did. Even though it could have been fun, but I think the monetization of that and the overall design just really didn't appeal to me. I hoped, so here was my dream for Diablo 4. Blizzard realizes, okay, some of the stuff we've made recently has not struck it with the fans. We are going to make a game that is more similar to what people fucking loved in Diablo and Diablo 2 and make that sort of experience. Diablo 3 was different. It was a new take. I mean, it's hard to say that it failed. I think Diablo 3 sold pretty well and a lot of people still play it and they improved the game a lot after launch.
Come on now.
But
come on.
I really hope that this will be like Diablo 1 or Diablo 2 or something like it. And with this, what they've announced and what they've shown so far, I am concerned that that is not going to be what we get. And the things, so I don't know how much more time we should spend on this, but the things that they announced for the standard edition, the deluxe edition, the ultimate edition, the things that you get on top, not really confident that this is going to be the gameplay experience that I'm hoping for, but we'll see when we get more gameplay footage, and obviously ultimately when the game comes out in June. But for now, with what I've seen and what I've heard, this reminds me more of Diablo 3 / Diablo Immortal than it does of Diablo 1 and Diablo 2. And that's what I was hoping I was going to get. So, but we'll see.
So if this is their last straw for you, what does that mean exactly?
Okay, so when I say last chance at redemption, it's basically, I feel like Blizzard has made so many bad decisions for me as a player. So here's the thing, right? I still play Classic WoW, and that's because that game is fucking amazing, okay? We're in Wrath of the Lich King now, which is also great. So original WoW, Burning Crusade, Wrath of the Lich King, great. I think the further we get, the less WoW appeals to me, especially the last couple ones they had just weren't my... I feel like a lot of the stuff that made the game so amazing got kind of lost over time. And maybe it's really hard to maintain that as the expansions go on. Like, maybe you have to rethink and do new shit that is totally different and can hit or miss with different people. But Warcraft 3 Reforged was a disaster. Diablo Immortal was a disaster from my perspective. It was probably pretty profitable, so from a business standpoint, it was maybe great, but it wasn't what I want video games to be personally. Diablo 3 was okay on launch.
The point I'm trying to make is if they fuck up this game real bad,
right,
and then they come up with World of Warcraft 2, you're playing World of Warcraft 2.
My point is that this is the final chance that I'm like, okay, does Blizzard still have a spark of that old stuff that was fucking amazing where they kept putting out great titles? And if this one also doesn't, I will just subscribe to the idea that the people that made the amazing games and had the amazing ideas and the amazing lead don't work for the company anymore, any of them. Like, they've either been fired, moved on, or the direction of the company changed entirely after
they
Activision
work for,
bought it up.
Those two new companies, I can't remember the name of Giant.
Yeah, so there's
something.
The
Cloud something.
Yeah, so there's the team that are making Frost Giant games, and then there's the what are they called? Haven.
Blue Haven?
No. Hang on, I will Google this very quickly. It is called Dreamhaven. There we go. Which is Mike Morhaime's new company, right? And he was one of the leads of the original Blizzard North and stuff. So, yeah. I mean, that's basically my take on it, is that I think Blizzard has just gone downhill. Their games have got worse. Their decisions have got worse. And maybe I'm just a boomer, and I miss the old times and the old games, and I need to get with the times. But that's the thing. A lot of these indie games that are released are like, imagine if Blizzard made something like that,
right,
but with their AAA production value. How fucking amazing could Diablo 4 actually be?
True. Yeah.
If point. They cater to me, make my game, Blizzard. Make what I like.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, that's my take on it. I was hoping, because like, it's like, clearly the community at large, they've got a lot of fucking flack from their loyal fans, right? Of which I would say I'm one of them, based on a lot of the old games that I loved and still play to this day, right? A lot of them really have given them so much criticism that it's like, okay, either at some point you either listen to that and you're like, okay, reality check, we lost ourselves along the way, let's go back to that, or you're like, we are different now, these fans will have to find something else. Like, you know, the Simpsons meme with, am I the one that's out of touch? No, it's the fans, you know, like that one. And to me, this game was going to be the final decider of which direction are they taking? Are they listening to all the feedback and trying to make the games that fans miss? Or is it just, is that time just over for them? Which, I mean, if it is, then that's how it is. Then Blizzard are just a different company now, and we will get our game fix from another developer. That's basically it. All right.
Nice
final
rant.
Topic that I put
I enjoyed
on
that
here.
Rant. Thank you.
Yeah, you love when I rant, don't you?
That was good.
When I show human emotion, it happens once in a while. All right, so finally I put this one in. Sometimes we put in some
Sorry,
fun
Senator,
stuff
can
that
I,
is not...
Can I interrupt uh-huh. you real quick?
Yep.
What about okay. the... Why don't you think of it from Blizzard's perspective? Why don't you look
oh,
at
I already
it from...
did. I already did. Does it make money? That's what I said. Oh, well, oh. Immortal wasn't great, but did it make money? And if it did, from a business perspective, you could consider it a success.
Yeah.
But I don't like the fact that people spend $10,000 on making that game, you know, very enjoyable and having everything. I don't like that direction.
See,
for
why
games.
Can't you use this tone when I'm going ham on Valve about stuff? There's a lot of decisions. I mean, it's not Blizzard for sure.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a lot
I mean,
of like
I
money
will
decisions.
Gladly criticize Valve where I think it's fair. I don't think they have done something like Diablo Immortal personally.
Well, of course not.
But
it's pretty hard to accomplish that.
And I think they're, I mean, honestly, in terms of like new releases and how they've treated their games, I think I've been very critical of how they did with Artifact and Underlords as well, to be fair. I really think so. You've just been spearheading it because you've been more passionate about, especially Artifact, so that's kind of been your thing, but
Ugh.
Most of the criticism you had for that, I 100% agreed with. Like, they ran it into the ground, and oh, I think that's a huge shame, so. Yeah.
All right, finish this off,
okay,
good boy.
Final topic. So sometimes we do something, if there's some sort of big news in like science or something that isn't related to gaming at all, but we think is interesting. I put this one on here. This is news from 2 days ago, so very fresh news. And this is from a CNN article. So it says here, the U.S. Department of Energy officials announced a history-making accomplishment in nuclear fusion Tuesday. For the first time, U.S. scientists produced more energy from fusion than the laser energy they used to power the experiment. A so-called net energy gain is a major milestone in a decades-long attempt to source clean, limitless energy from nuclear fusion, the reaction that happens when two or more atoms are fused together. The experiment put in 2.05 megajoules of energy to the target and resulted in 3.15 megajoules of fusion energy output, generating more than 50% more energy than was put in. It is the first time an experiment resulted in a meaningful gain of energy. Now, the thing that's really interesting about something like this, obviously, is that there's a long-term perspective here of having limitless energy that is not reliant on fossil fuels at all. And potentially, without knowing enough about this, I don't know how this interacts compared to other nuclear energy and whatnot. Whenever you read news like this, you get excited because it's like a huge thing, but obviously this is also something that's going to take a shitload of time before it actually can get implemented. But just the thought that this is possible is huge, because until now, this is an activity that we've only really observed in stars and the sun. So the fact that we've been able to recreate that is quite the milestone. From what I understand, though, the amount of energy that was gained relative to put in compared to how big of a setup it required to create this energy, I think making this some sort of like big scale thing for humanity is pretty far away, probably, like how big you need to make it. But just the fact that it's possible is really inspiring, right? Mm. So stuff like this, I just think is really fucking cool.
No, it's cool. Do you know what would really speed up the progress of it? If they found a way to make a weapon out of it, which they will, I'm sure.
Right. That's true.
That's when it will really take
off. Or if they could
off.
Turn it into microtransactions.
Well, that's if Blizzard buys them out first. That, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
The Blizzard power system.
I mean, no, this... I'm more cynical than you. I saw this headline as well, and I'm like, at first, you know, a lot of these, it's a bit clickbaity because it's still decades away from having any real impact on IRL, but it is cool to hear. I don't know, obviously, I'm not a scientist. I don't know if you knew this, Sindarin.
I do.
I don't know that much about it. But it is good news. So hopefully I'll be alive when this actually turns into something that we see every day. Because that would be amazing to not have to use any fossil fuels for any of this shit, obviously.
But is it too late? Have we done too much damage already? We might be dead already. We might be in a simulation. In a different world.
Imagine humanity makes its biggest breakthrough. They make the best discovery of how they can completely remove all sorts of issues with the environment. But it's too late.
Yes.
So you make this groundbreaking discovery. And then humanity is wiped out because we found out too late. Imagine that.
Irony.
That sounds like something humans would do.
Yes. I mean, if you think about it, how long did dinosaurs live? Hundreds of millions of years, right?
Yep.
Humans will not live that long. Are you kidding me? Dinosaurs will always be the, apex predator. They will be the longest living ones. No doubt about it. No chance, Cinderin. No chance.
Yeah.
So enjoy playing your WoW raids every day because that's as good as life will get. I don't know. I'm going with
it's
that.
It's glorious.
yes.
But yeah. So yeah, just to round this out, if you guys are curious about it in a little bit more detail, they effectively produced enough energy to boil 2.5 gallons of water with a huge laser setup. So obviously, the cost benefit here is totally off, and there's no way it's even remotely close to implementing it for like general use. But the proof of concept is very important here. That's how a lot of scientific progress starts, is that there's a proof of concept, it's not efficient, but then we make it more and more efficient over the next decades, and suddenly we have stuff. I think the first proof of concept for a flat screen TV was like from the 60s, I think, or 70s.
Really?
And it wasn't really commercially widespread until the zeros or the tens, right? No. Flat screen TVs. Or maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe it's from the 80s, but it's like decades older than when you started seeing them in the stores. So sometimes things just take time.
It was the same with color TV.
Yep.
They had that from the, if I remember right, could be wrong, they had that right away, but they didn't use it for some, I can't remember the reason. Maybe it was cost. I can't remember.
Probably.
Yeah, they had black and white TVs for quite a while before color came in.
Yep.
Okay, that'll do it for today. Next week, like we said, potentially two episodes. So look forward to that. One thing I forgot to mention is that there is an Ability Arena tournament on the 17th, so in a couple days, 17th and 18th, you can sign up. There's still some slots left. You go to abilityarena.com/tournaments. The sign up button is there. $1,000 prize pool, all that good stuff, in-game stuff. I'll put the link in the description as always. All right. Till next time, Suns fan Cinder and signing out. Peace.
Bye.
We say things that don't mean anything.
Subscribe.
But thanks for listening.